It's Thursday, July 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the debate on the Iran nuclear deal.
It's possible they could have been watching videos or even listening to CDs on the recitation of the Holy Quran. Because it's the month of Ramadan, and the Muslims throughout the world increase the recitation, the hearing, and things to do with religion.
A group of tourists are detained in China for unspecified reasons. Also ahead, a dwarf planet looms large. Controversy over country singer Waylon Jennings. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Barack Obama says he expects U.S. congressional debate over the Iran pact to be robust, and he says it should be. Speaking with reporters Wednesday at the White House, and as heard live earlier on International Edition, Mr. Obama said the contention by some opponents that Iran should have no nuclear capability, not even for peaceful purposes, is unrealistic.
You'll hear some critics say, well, we could have negotiated a better deal. Okay, what does that mean? I think the suggestion among a lot of the critics has been that a better deal, an acceptable deal, would be one in which Iran has no nuclear capacity at all, peaceful or otherwise. The problem with that position is that there is nobody who thinks that Iran would or could ever accept that, and the international community does not take the view that Iran can't have a peaceful nuclear program. They agree with us that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. And so we don't have diplomatic leverage to eliminate every vestige of a peaceful nuclear program in Iran. What we do have the leverage to do is to make sure they don't have a weapon. That's exactly what we've done.
President Obama said there will be real consequences for Iran if it violates terms of the deal, including reintroduction of economic sanctions, scheduled to end if Tehran adheres to the deal it agreed to after months of negotiations with Britain, France, Germany, China, Russia, and the United States. Will the agreement lead to greater dialogue between Tehran and Washington? That's the question International Edition journalist Jeffrey Young put to Middle East Institute senior fellow Alex Fatanka.
I think it would be not only smart thing to do, but perhaps even the essential thing to do if you want to keep this nuclear agreement alive and something that exists beyond the Obama presidency, which ends in 2 years' time. What Iran and the United States need to do is to look to build on this nuclear agreement. There is so much that divides Iran and the United States that one single historic agreement, as important as it is, the question is, will it be enough to keep them together for the foreseeable future? I mean, remember that the lifespan of this agreement is 10 years. If you want to keep it alive for 10 years, you've got to start building on the political confidence. And that is the hard work that needs to start sooner rather than later.
There are people who look at the situation in Yemen, who look at the situation in Syria, and say, can we, should we even begin to engage Iran on these issues? Aren't they on the other side of what's going on here? What is your sense of that?
I mean, that's a justifiable question to ask, because there is so much bad blood going back 36 years to 1979, and it's going to be almost impossible to overturn that in any quick fashion. But if you're realistic about it, you want to sit down, you want to look at where you are in the region. And there are issues where Iranian-American interests overlap, most obviously, notably in Iraq with the fight against the Islamic State of Daesh. The Iranian-Americans are already, in effect, fighting the same fight against that terrorist organization. And then if you can do that convincingly, you can go down the list and perhaps even pick up more challenging conflicts that Iranian-American interests could again work together.
And, of course, there are people who will stand up and say, wait a minute, what about Robert Levinson? What about Jason Rezaian? There are American nationals who are being held by Iran, and we haven't seen much movement on that. And there's people on the Hill who keep raising that, too, and say, why do we want any agreement with Iran whatsoever until we get these people back?
You know, I would say people are absolutely right in asking those questions. what the Iranian system is doing right now in keeping some of these dual nationals in prison on very dubious charges, if not trumped up charges, you know, you have to question that. And again, it goes back to that debate inside Tehran today. What is Iran going to be from today onwards?
Alex Fatanka, Middle East Institute Senior Fellow, speaking with VOA's Jeffrey Young of our International Edition team. Continuing with Iran, International Edition's G. Abby Lee is right here in our studio to tell us about the reaction to the deal on social media. Hi, G. What are people saying about the nuclear agreement on the web?
Hi, Jim. Well, let's try something different today. Okay. So instead of looking at what people are saying, let's turn our attention to who is not saying anything about the deal on Twitter. And as you know, it's been more than 24 hours since the Iran deal was reached, but leading presidential candidates from both parties are not commenting on the issue.
Well, I know you're going to comment. Can you specify who they are for our listeners?
Absolutely. It's the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side and the real estate tycoon Donald Trump from the Republican Party. You know, Clinton has been tweeting on a wide range of issues, from immigration reforms to wages, but not about the nuclear deal, and same for Trump. He has been replying to TV personalities and media, you know, as he does, but he hasn't mentioned the deal at all on Twitter.
Well, what about the other presidential hopefuls? Are they saying anything?
Well, it's quite interesting that the other candidates are more vocal about the deal than the leading candidates. So Jeb Bush, who is trailing right behind Trump in polls, tweeted about 4 hours ago that the deal has legitimized Iran being a nuclear threshold country. As for Bernie Sanders, who is quite a lot behind Clinton actually, tweeted Monday night that the deal is a victory for diplomacy over saber rattling. But he didn't post any additional tweets on the issue Tuesday.
Well, what about the public's reaction to President Obama's speech today?
There was a lot of interest surrounding the speech and the Q&A session. Iran was one of the top 10 trending topics on Twitter Tuesday, and the word Iran was used in nearly 600,000 tweets worldwide. And according to the social media analytics website Topsy, hashtag Iran deal was used in nearly 65,000 tweets in the last 24 hours. Jim?
Quite a few. Thank you for the update, G. G. Abby Lee. And you can follow her on Twitter by that same name, at G. Abby Lee. Just make sure you get all the E's in there. J-E-E-A-B-B-E-Y-L-E-E. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. China has arrested 20 foreign tourists who were traveling the country. The tourists were arrested at the Erdos Airport in China's Inner Mongolia. 11 of the tourists have been released, according to a statement by the South Africa-based disaster relief organization Gift of the Givers. It says, though, 9 others remain detained without charge for watching unspecified propaganda videos. Imtiaz Suleiman is the chairman and founder of Gift of the Givers, and he spoke to International Edition host Sarah Williams about the controversy.
What is known so far about the arrest of apparently about 20 foreign tourists by China?
Well, the information we have is that they were arrested last week Friday at 9:40 a.m. China time. They were touring the country. It was a 47-day tour package organized by a company called China Odyssey Tour. They were into day 30 of the tour, having gone through several cities in the country, when they were stopped at Erdos Airport, which is in Inner Mongolia. Their phones were confiscated. They couldn't contact the South African embassy and the British embassy. The group comprised 10 South Africans, 9 British, and 1 Indian national. So none of them could contact the embassies. They couldn't contact the family members. They couldn't contact the tour operator, and they couldn't have any access to any legal person. It was only on Sunday, 48 hours later, when the tour operator found that his group was arrested, that he then started calling the family members related to these 20 people. And it is at that point that one of the family members in South Africa asked me if I can assist. And I normally do get involved in international relations issues because I have a very close relationship with the South African government, and I have a humanitarian organization. We are the largest disaster agency on the African continent, and we've been involved in 42 countries in disaster projects. So they asked me. I involved my government. They went out on Monday night. They flew from Beijing to Inner Mongolia, met the Chinese authorities, and were trying to ascertain what was the reason for the arrest. No clear explanation has been given.
Okay, because I had read that the reason was they apparently were watching some sort of what the Chinese government was calling propaganda videos in their rooms.
Yes. Now, they provided three reasons. The first one they said is they think they have some information, or they know, or they have a suspicion that one of the group members has some links to terror organizations somewhere in the world, but no clarification was given on that. Then secondly, they were told that somebody belongs to some banned organization. Is the banned organization in China or somewhere outside China? If it's outside China, how does it affect Chinese internal politics? And thirdly, and the most strangest one, was this, that some of the family members or group members were watching propaganda video. What is this propaganda video? How does it affect China? We don't know. They haven't produced that evidence at all to say these are the videos. My only understanding is this, that since someone in that group were Muslim, it's possible they could have been watching videos or even listening to CDs on the recitation of the Holy Quran. Because it's the month of Ramadan, and Muslims throughout the world increase the recitation, the hearing, and things to do with religion. And it could be that, or it could be something playing that is in praise of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. That's the only logical thing I can think of they could have been doing in the month of Ramadan and nothing else.
So what are the families going to do? I mean, and also what is the tour company? What are their plans to try to get these people freed?
Well, now the tour company and the families can't do much. It all depends on a government-to-government relationship. That's why we engage the South African government and the British people engage the British government. I don't know anything about Indian National and whether his government is involved. He's only one. But still, he's one. He's a human being. He needs to get out of there if he's innocent. But the South African government has engaged the Chinese government. The South African deputy president is on a state visit to China with a whole group of government ministers and deputy ministers, together with a business entourage. And we are calling upon our government to stress upon the deputy president to stress and deal directly with the Chinese high authorities to say, look, if you have a case against the citizens of my country, produce the evidence, bring the proof, and charge them if you have any such thing. If you don't have any proof or any evidence, then don't hold them in custody, release them unconditionally, and let them go back home. And that's what the families and we are calling for the deputy president to do. What the British are going to do, I don't know. And what the Indian National is going to do, I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Suleiman, for speaking with me today.
International Edition can be heard several times every weekday. Sarah Williams is one of our hosts. She spoke with Imtiaz Suleiman, who is the chairman and founder of The Gift of the Givers. Well, while various serious issues on the ground have been in our view for the past weeks, scientists have been getting their first detailed look at an object on the edge of our solar system. That would be Pluto. Here's VOA science correspondent Rick Pantaleo.
Flight controllers at the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physical Laboratory in Laurel, Maryland, celebrated as history was made on Tuesday, July 14th at 11:49 UTC, when NASA's New Horizons spacecraft made its closest approach to Pluto. The New Horizons is the fastest spacecraft that has ever been launched. It's hurtling through the Pluto system at more than 53,000 kilometers per hour. After traveling nearly a decade, some 5 billion kilometers, into the far reaches of our solar system, the first craft to be sent to Pluto flew within 12,500 kilometers above the surface of the dwarf planet. Once New Horizons processes all the information from the flyby, it will send back nearly 10 years worth of data it has gathered since its mission began in January 2006. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
And scientists say information already obtained by the $700 million New Horizons probe shows that Pluto is slightly larger than previously thought. The flyby caps a 9-year, 5 billion kilometer journey. The International Astronomical Union, by the way, demoted Pluto from a full-fledged planet to a dwarf planet back in 2006. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Country superstar Luke Bryan is probably best known for his music, but he recently made some comments about outlaw country icon Waylon Jennings that just didn't sit well with the late singer's family. But as International Edition's David Byrd found out from Nikki Strong, the two sides have worked out their differences.
If you're a fan of outlaw country, then the names Merle, Willie, and Waylon are just part of your everyday vocabulary. But Luke Bryan apparently had a little bit of a dispute with Merle, Willie, and Waylon, and it got a little heated. Nikki, what was the nature of this dispute, first of all, and what happened? I understand that there's been some peacemaking.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think at the heart of it is the notion of a new school artist disrespecting their predecessors.
That would be Luke Bryan.
Yes, of course. And so basically what happened, Luke Bryan did this interview, and when he was talking about the changes in country music, he basically said, and I'm quoting him, "I think that people who want Merle, Willie, and Waylon just need to buy Merle, Willie, and Waylon. I'm not an outlaw country singer. I don't do cocaine and run around, so I'm not going to sing about outlaw country. I like to hunt, fish, ride around on my farm, build a big bonfire, and drink some beers, and that's what I sing about. It's what I know. I don't know about laying in the gutter strung out on drugs. I don't really want to do that."
Oh. Ouch.
Yes. Ouch, exactly. And so fans were furious, especially the fans of Waylon Jennings, who is no longer here with us. And so Waylon Jennings' daughter-in-law in particular lit into him. And she basically said, "I hope your family members are proud of you for using your worldwide platform to take the time to disrespect my father-in-law." She said, "You have managed to prove to the world your true self, albeit that Waylon's drug use is well documented and something he overcame. I assure you, he was never laying in a gutter."
I've always been crazy, but it's kept me from going insane.
What happens is that Shooter Jennings then chimes in, and he extends...
And Shooter Jennings is who? Is that Waylon's son?
Yes, it's okay. His son. He extends an olive branch because he said, you know, Luke Bryan, once he realized how much stuff he stirred up, he called up Shooter's mother and apologized.
Mm.
And for...
Like a good Southern gentleman ought to,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And
good country boy, your mama raised you that you got to own up to something stupid.
Yes. So he apologized to her, and Shooter saying, you know, "I know what it's like to misfire at the mouth from personal experience." And so, and Luke Bryan was basically saying, even though he apologized, but he's like, I just feel like he felt like his intentions were taken out of context, that he really wasn't trying to belittle anyone's legacy, but he was just saying that it was a difference in style.
Okay, well, what do you think? Are you on Twitter? If you are, you can send Nikki a tweet at @VOA_music. You can also send one to us here at International Edition. That's @VOA_IE. And you can listen for Nikki on Country Hits USA at www.voanews.com.
You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America, which, by the way, has been around quite a while. It's, I guess, about 73 years now we've been in existence. It's built on the backs of great efforts by great people, like our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Aydin Utku. And you, our listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On a recent visit to the Balkans, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs Victoria Nuland called on leaders and citizens alike across the region to resist the forces seeking to unwind the democratic and economic progress they've achieved over the last 20 years. This will require turning the page on old hatreds and new rivalries. While some Balkan countries have made great democratic progress, too much time is still being wasted feuding in Bosnia-Herzegovina. 20 years after Dayton, said Ms. Nuland, it is unconscionable that the unity of the state is still publicly questioned by those seeking to block reform and putting International Monetary Fund assistance at risk. The message to Macedonia is equally important, said Assistant Secretary Nuland. Every opportunity for unity and prosperity awaits you. But the major political forces must stop squabbling and get on the path to democratic reform, and then move on to settle the name issue with Greece. The second set of challenges facing the Balkans includes regional development, integration, and energy security. These countries must replace old rivalries with cooperation and embrace regional projects that bring jobs, investment, and clean business practices to the whole region. Finally, the Balkan countries need to join forces to create a no-go zone for violent extremism, corruption, and criminality. Corruption remains a major impediment to progress in this region. It is the cancer that saps strength from democracies and drives up unemployment and civil unrest. More than that, it opens vulnerabilities that autocrats, petrostates, and violent extremists exploit. Either the work of the last 20 years can be completed with wise decisions by courageous leaders and people pushing for a better life, or this region can fall prey once again to the risks, hatred, and outside interference that brought it grief so many times before. The United States continues to stand with its partners in the transatlantic community in support of a Balkans finally whole, free, at peace, and prosperous.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.